and DiGiulio. Welcome to today's episode of the Tobacco Cessation Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about 1115 waivers and state plan amendments, or SPAs. These are tools that are used to change state Medicaid programs, what their coverage is, reimbursement, types of providers that are reimbursed. Later in today's episode, we'll be joined by Lara Coughlin, who we've been working with to provide technical assistance on working to implement an 1115 waiver in their state. But first, my colleague Ruth Canovi and I are going to be talking a little bit about some background around state plan amendments, or SPAs as they're sometimes called, and 1115 waivers. Ruth, do you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Thanks, Anne. I appreciate you having me on today. As you said, my name is Ruth Canovi. I'm the Advocacy Director for the American Lung Association here in Connecticut. But you and I work really closely on a project that helps tobacco control programs in states and other stakeholders to work on improving coverage for tobacco cessation all throughout the country. So happy to be here today to talk with you about how to improve Medicaid throughout the country.
Great. So just to give everybody kind of a background and make sure we're all on the same place, and apologies if you already know everything in the world about state plan amendments and 1115 waivers, but just want to make sure everybody's in the same place. So the Medicaid program is a program that's jointly funded by the federal government. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, administers that program, as well as the states. And the Medicaid program has a ton of flexibility, and states have a ton of opportunities to implement and administer that program how best they see fit for their states. There is a very small list of services and benefits that are required to be covered, but there's a huge list of things that aren't. And so there are certain services and treatments that the federal government is fine with the state covering, but the state has to elect to cover that. And these are called optional services. So a state could use something called, so states have state plans, which is the agreement between the state Medicaid program and the federal government, or CMS, as to what treatments they're going to cover, how frequently they're going to cover it, which types of providers are going to be reimbursed, what levels they're going to be reimbursed at, and so just a bunch of different things, and what populations in their state Medicaid programs are eligible for those services. So it kind of just really defines what that Medicaid program is. States can use a state plan amendment, or a SPA, to make changes to that. This is a very non-controversial tool. It's used to make changes in coverage. It's used to when the federal government says there's a new mandatory service. A state has to use a state plan amendment to explain to the federal government how they're covering that, and then how they're getting reimbursed by the federal government for the dollars that they're spending on it. The other tool to change the state Medicaid program are 1115 waivers. 1115 waivers are experimental in nature. It allows a state to waive part of a statute, part of the Medicaid statute, in order to figure out a way to best serve their Medicaid population. Some states use this to implement managed care in their state. Typically, the way Medicaid is designed and structured, states have to reimburse any provider that a patient that participates in the Medicaid program and a patient wants to go to. However, we know with managed care that one of the ways that managed care can be effective is to limit the provider network. So states are going to waive that, what is called freedom of choice, so that patients can't go to any provider they choose. They can only go to the ones that the managed care providers, the managed care plan says that they can. Which is a very common way states use something like an 1115 waiver. But I want to emphasize that both of these tools are neutral tools that can be used for improving coverage. Unfortunately, we've also seen 1115 waivers be utilized for decreasing access to care. And just want to share a little bit more about kind of how we came about this. So Ruth, do you want to share a little bit about the cohort that you you held a couple months ago?
Absolutely. So those listening can clearly hear that there's a lot of expertise around these issues. So thanks, Anne, for sharing all of that. But I think we've had a couple of states reach out to us, I think, over the summer and really in the last year or so, looking for some guidance on how to improve coverage. And so staff here at the Lung Association helped states kind of think through this process. And so we decided to have one of our cohort series really address this to make sure that states and other people that we work with had a better understanding of these tools and ways that we can work with our partners to help improve coverage. And so last year we held two calls, and so we invited a number of folks to come and sit on these calls, and Anne and some other speakers really highlighted these tools, the state plan amendments and 1115 waivers, and the way different ways that states have used them to improve coverage, and more on like the timeline, resources that are available to help people kind of think through these processes. And then, so we had two calls, one on state plan amendments and one on 1115 waivers. And then what we did as follow-up was offer anyone who was part of that to really talk through some of the questions that they had afterwards with the states and any partners that they wanted to invite. And so we've had some additional follow-up with people who've been on these calls and helping them think through what they can do in their states to improve Medicaid coverage using one or either of these tools. And so that's been a really helpful process, I think. And so I'm really glad that we have Lara on our call with us today, or joining us in this conversation rather, to kind of model some of the things that we've done with her and help people think through some of these questions that might come up when they're thinking about doing this.
Ruth, if somebody wasn't able to join the cohort and is really interested in working in their state to do something with a state plan amendment or an 1115 waiver to improve tobacco cessation coverage, what should they do? How can the Lung Association be helpful?
Well, we have staff available to really help kind of people walk through the questions that they have. And so I think what we've done today is kind of modeled some of the questions that can come up. So give people an idea of this, but reach out to us. We are available and want to help. So please contact us, and I'm sure there'll be information in the show notes with email addresses. But the other thing that I wanted to point to is we have a wealth of resources available on our website, lung.org/cessationTA, that really outlines a lot of things that come up here. We have a primer on state plan amendments and 1115 waivers and what these tools are. We also have a glossary of terms that you might even hear today and in having these conversations on how to kind of translate public health speak in terms that we use to more clinical and insurance or payer language and lingo that's used. And so I think that can be a really helpful tool that we have. So that's one thing that I want to point out, or two things that I want to point out in our resource library, but want to flag that if anyone is interested, we have a lot of information about coverage or tobacco cessation in our resource library.
Thank you so much. We're now going to jump to our conversation with Lara Coughlin from Michigan. We hope that you enjoy their discussion that we have. We're going to answer some of Lara's questions and hopefully give everybody a little bit of a better idea of kind of how to use 1115 waivers and state plan amendments to improve tobacco cessation coverage in your state. Again, please feel free to reach out to us at cessationta@lung.org if you've got any questions, and we'll be back after our conversation. Lara, would you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me today. So my name is Lara Coughlin. I'm a clinical psychologist by training and an assistant professor at the University of Michigan, housed in our Department of Psychiatry. And I do work around lots of different substance use and mental health conditions, really focusing on how we can improve health behaviors to improve people's overall health and well-being. And one area that I have a lot of work is around providing people with incentives. Sometimes these types of treatments are called contingency management or behavioral economic treatments, but providing people with incentives in order to foster behavior change and to reward more healthy behaviors. And some of this work is what I'm really hoping we get a chance to talk a little bit about today.
Excellent. So this is exciting. Can you tell us a bit more about kind of your goals for expanding Medicaid coverage and what you're looking at?
Yeah. So one area that has really been an area of focus for me is how we see some really significant health disparities among our Medicaid beneficiaries here in Michigan related to their cigarette smoking rates. And one way that I have approached how we can address this disparity and really promote better health equity is by providing people who are Medicaid beneficiaries with models of care above and beyond what is already sort of standard practice. And what I'm thinking about when I say that are digital interventions and incentive-based interventions. So if you can imagine for a moment someone who wants to quit smoking, and in addition to all the standard services, maybe they get NRT, maybe they have called the quit line, but in addition to that, their doctor says, well, you can try out this app to help you too. And for that app, what we're hoping to be able to provide people with is incentives where they get actual money, is what I mean by incentives, when they show that they haven't smoked, where the fact that they haven't smoked is actually verified by their breath CO. We can measure it by someone's breath CO, whether or not they've smoked recently or not. And so to answer your question, Ruth, specifically, what I really want to see in expanding Medicaid coverage is to sort of follow the wave that's been starting in our country with providing incentives to people for changing health behaviors, especially in the substance use field. There are several programs that are providing incentives, or several states, I should say, that are providing incentives for not using stimulants, not using opioids in some cases, and to expand those to also cover smoking.
Awesome. That sounds pretty exciting. Do you have any questions for us in the way that you're approaching this work?
Yeah. So I'm so thankful for the opportunity to talk with you all and to get some of your input on how might be good ways to go about approaching expansions in Medicaid coverage in order to move the coverage in our state towards covering incentive-based interventions, and maybe also we could touch on towards covering digital interventions, and if those should be sort of separate or actually sort of bundled together.
Yeah, no, those are really great questions. And so, you know, in the previously, Ruth and I have talked a little bit about 1115 waivers and state plan amendments or SPAs. So I think, you know, when you look at those two types of interventions or two types of goals you're trying to achieve, both in terms of getting digital or app-based interventions covered, as well as incentives for, you know, succeeding in those health activities, we need to look at what is an allowable cost under the state Medicaid program and under CMS, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and is the federal partner for the state Medicaid program. So when we think about what you're trying to do, those tend to be slightly more experimental in nature. They're technically not, traditionally not allowable costs under the Medicaid program, under CMS. So it probably would make most sense to look for an 1115 waiver to try to achieve some of these goals.
Okay, that's really helpful to know. And I guess as a follow-up to that, do you have any suggestions for me about what types of partners I could engage in order to help move this forward?
Absolutely. And so I would say kind of a first point of contact is really making and building relationships with your Medicaid, state Medicaid office. I feel like we're often in this kind of public health space where we have a lot of language and types of ways that we approach this work. And the people in your Medicaid office are the ones who are actually going to write that 1115 waiver or the SPAS, you know, state plan amendment. So they can help work with you to help figure out what your goals are, but then work with them to try to figure out how we can translate that into kind of Medicaid speak and work. So it's really working to ensure that you've got Medicaid so in support of your goals, but also will help kind of do all of that work to pursue this is really important. I know that when we've talked to other folks and colleagues of yours throughout the country, another area that has been really helpful is kind of looking internally at state health departments and learning what has worked. Because I think, you know, we're speaking specifically around tobacco cessation and coverage, but there's been some real success in other chronic diseases as well. So kind of building those relationships within the state departments of health to kind of adopt some lessons learned from other disease areas as well can be very helpful. And lastly, I'll say is kind of patient and community organizations are really important to groups like, you know, we're here from the American Lung Association, but there's a number of other community organizations that are really invested in improving access to care and ensuring that people who are addicted to nicotine and tobacco products have the resources to help them quit. So I think those are kind of the three areas that I would really underscore and stress that you work to build partnerships with.
It's so useful to know who we actually need to be talking about in order to move this forward. So in addition to sort of who we might want to be partnering with, do you have any advice as far as sort of like your tips or keys for success? Are there things I need to know or data that I need to have in hand?
Yeah, so when we think about an 1115 waiver, which is kind of that what we're thinking is the best tool to help get incentive payments for individuals who quit using tobacco and engage in that treatment, as well as kind of some of the app-based treatments covered. You know, there's a number of different things to keep in mind. So first and foremost, 1115 waivers are experimental in nature. They're pilot programs, kind of allowing the laboratories of the states to work and really do what they do best and to see and test if different interventions work. There are a couple of things that a state has to show to get an 1115 waiver approved. So these are kind of some things that can help in kind of building off a little bit of what Ruth said before. The first thing is that 1115 waivers need to be budget neutral to the federal government. The state can put as much money as they want into it, but states may or may not be willing to do that depending on what the intervention is and kind of the fiscal health of that state. But you have to make sure that it's budget neutral for the federal government. So that's a big thing. So to make sure if there's any data on that, to keep that in mind. You know, kind of building off of what Ruth said, has this worked in other chronic diseases, for other substance abuses? Can you build off of that and show that this is something that can work or has the ability to work? It doesn't have to be proven when you start it, because again, there's an experimental nature to an 1115 waiver. But to kind of get some of those data can help, and kind of to get some of those costs of what the intervention will cost and kind of what your estimated savings will be, because you need to show again that this, the anticipated waiver will be budget neutral.
That's really okay. So I'm just trying to soak all of that in. And at the same time, I guess it'd be helpful for me in my planning process of moving this forward to get a sense of the time frame and like how long does this process take and what can one expect as far as outcomes, whether or not they go for a SPA or an 1115 waiver?
Yeah, this is a great question. And so I'll start with 1115 waivers. That's what we've been spending some of our time on here with you specifically. So with 1115 waiver, there's both comment periods are required for the state and the federal auspices, and so required 30-day comment periods for each of those, both in the state and on the federal side of things. However, there's no requirement on timing for approval from CMS. So again, because these are kind of like pilot projects, experimental in nature, it can take some time to figure this out. And so just for people who are looking at this to kind of set their standards, that sometimes these waivers can be submitted and it can take a long time for them to be approved. And there's no timeline required for kind of movement on that. One other thing, just kind of in terms of process, is that there is an evaluation period that's required with an 1115 waiver. Kind of for contrast, for a state plan amendment, there are no comment period that's required. The state plan amendment is filed and CMS has 90 days to approve or deny that state plan amendment. And if they don't kind of have an official ruling, it basically goes into effect. I want to just flag that CMS can stop the clock once by asking for additional information if they need that as they're kind of determining that piece. I did say that there's no requirement for comment periods, but states sometimes do have their own requirements for state plan amendment as well. So that's something that each state would have to take a look at and see what's required there. So I'm hoping that that's helpful. And I know these can be a lot, but just kind of an overall expectation on what the differences are in that kind of time and process.
Yeah, really useful to have sort of an idea of what comes next.
Lara, we've been working together for a number of months on kind of walking through some of these questions and some of these processes with you and some of your colleagues. And so we'd love for you to share kind of some of what you've learned and what you'd want your peers to know when they're considering using some of these tools to access and improve access to cessation treatment in their state Medicaid programs.
Yes, I think that I've learned a couple things that I have found so useful. One has been really closely partnering with our state Department of Health. Our tobacco section here in Michigan has been so helpful to me in learning about the state Medicaid landscape and in thinking about what might work to move forward and what might not. Also really helpful was the lung cohort that I participated in getting the chance to sort of entry into thinking about SPAs and 1115s and how to weigh sort of pros and cons pursuing either one. And then the last thing that I would say that has been so useful is just having a ton of conversations at the state level and also the national level to get a sense of what other people are doing that I might not be aware of that are in sort of a similar vein as work I want to do. So, you know, how I learned about some states like California that have recovery incentive programs that are already doing incentive-based programs, and then thinking about how that could apply to tobacco cessation work. So having just conversation over conversation, and some of them not leading anywhere, but some of them really leading to new ways of thinking, new approaches, and then really great opportunities to work together. So I guess one last question I wanted to ask you all while I have you here is to sort of ask what's next. Are there other resources that I should know about?
It's a great question. So we have a number of resources that are available, and I appreciate you plugging some of those in part of those conversations. But we have kind of just the overall fact sheet for people who want to dive in a little bit more on that, like, what is an 1115 waiver and what's that SPA look like? We did have, you mentioned, the cohort around kind of looking at this and doing some brainstorming about how to improve coverage in Medicaid for tobacco cessation. One thing that I want to make sure people know about that I'm proud of is that we worked on this glossary that does look at kind of that insurance terminology that exists out there that sometimes those of us in the public health world don't always know. And it's a clear, I feel like it will help anyone who's looking to kind of bridge that gap and make those connections with Medicaid and trying to improve coverage. That can be really helpful. And the other thing that we have that we've been doing a lot of in the last few months is really one-on-one technical assistance for people that want to kind of get in and work on this in their state. Ann and I and some of our colleagues are available to really kind of help answer these questions just like we've done here today and figure out what are your goals, what are the best tools and resources to kind of go about that, and how can we help. So those are kind of the things that we have. I will plug that our website, www.lung.org/cessationTA, has a ton of resources around tobacco cessation and coverage. But thank you, Lara. That was a great question.
And I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining today's podcast. It's been wonderful talking with you, and looking forward to continuing to working with you. And for all of our listeners out there, again, Ruth shared a number of really helpful resources that we have. We'll be sure to link that glossary in the show notes. And please keep on listening to us. So thank you all. And Lara, if you have anything else to say, but if not, have a great day.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. I love getting to talk with you, and I appreciate all your help.
Thanks.
Thanks. I hope everybody enjoyed that conversation with Lara. I really enjoyed our time together. Ruth, do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share with our colleagues?
I'd like to just underscore that the Lung Association is available to help people through this process. As I think you will have garnered, there's a lot here, but there's a lot of expertise available. And so we want to help you think through this and really just want to improve tobacco cessation coverage in our states and for people who are addicted to these products. So thanks for your time and really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks to everybody listening today, especially to Lara for joining us. And we will see you next time on the American Lung Association's Tobacco Cessation Podcast. Thank you.
Thanks.